In this episode of the Neverwinter Nights podcast, join us as we interview Dieter, head DM of the Nodelands, a Neverwinter Nights 2 persistent world.
It's the Neverwinter Nights podcast.
The Neverwinter Nights podcast.
The only podcast for the Neverwinter Nights game series, bringing you news, interviews, reviews, and more for the community by the community. You can find us online at NeverwinterNightsPodcast.com. And now, on to the show!
Hey, this is Brian from the Realms of Trinity and the Neverwinter Nights Podcast.
And this is Dieter, head DM of the Known Lands.
And you're listening to the 137th episode of the Neverwinter Nights Podcast. A podcast all about the Neverwinter Nights series of role-playing games. Well, tonight we got a great interview. It's kind of a fireside chat, almost like old Franklin Delano Roosevelt, with the head DM of the Known Lands. And we've had a great conversation talking about his persistent world, where we discussed everything from the creation, how many years it's been up, and the early days, and just about everything they cover the way that their persistent world works. Well, I'm going to go over some news items. I have a few things that I've found on the vault that I think that are worth mentioning and going over. Some really good custom content and a tutorial. So without further ado, well, for the Neverwinter Nights 1 news, the tutorial that I found that I thought was really interesting. If you ever wanted to know how to import animated textures in Neverwinter Nights 1, well, there's you're in luck because there's a new tutorial that was just placed out there. It's a 5-part YouTube video tutorial, which is a lot better than some of the documentation that ends up going on the vault and where you spend about 80 hours trying to figure out heads and tails what's going on. This is an actual video tutorial, which is done really well. At the end of the tutorial, you'll be able to create your own animated textures from scratch, import any animated GIF into an NWN ready sprite sheet, and have access to tools that will allow basically you to convert any moving image sequence, including from videos, into animated NWN texture. This is an extremely powerful tutorial that will allow you to unlock a lot of features in Neverwinter Nights 1, and you can use that to really bring modules, system worlds, and things like that to really bring them to life and give your stuff a whole new set of legs. So I urge you to take a look at that. The link's in the show notes for the vault page and everything. I have a Neverwinter Nights 1 module that was handed off to us on our forum for review, and I took a look at it. It is fantastic. It's a winner of the AME Golden Dragon Award for Best Role-Playing Module. And here's just a review of what the reviewer had posted on the vault, and from what little I've been able to get through it, I'd have to agree with the reviewer on this. So here's what he had to say. It's a deeply atmospheric. It contains one of the best designed cities that I've ever seen, with its seedy, darkened alleys bustling with peddlers, toots, beggars, and thugs. Aragonos feels like a living city full of hidden mysteries to explore. I've played a rogue, and not only did the author make the shop-worn rats in the cellar quest interesting, he used it to immerse me into the story and environment. I did really feel like I was starring a lowly gutter rat who, through the twist of fate, rises to level of hero. Little details such as a town crier shouting news in the streets or rundown appearance in a chapel of slums really give it the module flavor and to come to life. The NPCs, while not astounding, do have personality. The story is interesting. The author makes good use of custom tile sets and other custom content to give the module fresh experience, and the combat is very challenging. I would urge anybody out there, if you give this module a chance, it's extremely well done, especially Neverwinter Nights 1, that there's a lot of content out there. So it's, you know, you can kind of get lost in the swamps trying to figure out what to play next. I mean, there's a ton of content. A lot of it's good, but this one really stands out. I would definitely urge you, all the players and all listeners out there, to give us a shot. If you still got Neverwinter Nights 1 up or running, give it a shot. Neverwinter Nights 2 news, there is a new module that was just posted to the IGN vault. It's called Against the Cult of the Reptile God. What it is, it's a redo of an old classic TSR module from 1982. And it was originally written by Douglas Niles for a party of characters level 1 to 3, ideally for first level adventurers. The odd bit here is different due to limitations of the tool set, but on the whole, it was work to try to make it feel like the original still. The adventure is designed for single or multiple players, and help is available at the starting town if any is needed to skills of the party. Depending on your level, experience, and playstyle, you may need more or less of them to play to help you through it. Please be aware, though, Brother Gareth is a little excited sometimes and forgets to equip his maul and enthusiastic smiling. Link to this is also in the show notes, so if you get a chance to check out a new fresh Neverwinter Nights 2 module, this is one to check out, especially one that has an old D&D feel to it. It's hard to find. You know, a lot of times content, including content that we've created, is more on the lines of the campaigns that are been created in the current years. So they're a little more scaled up and a little more action-packed and beefy for your characters. But this one, it gets you back to the basics, and it actually really lets you grind your character through getting started in something and in a new place. It's just really well done. So I'd give this one a shot as well. The link to that page is in the show notes as well. Okay, we got Dieter from the Known Land. So why don't we give him a shout, and let's get this interview started. Well, hey, thanks a lot, Dieter, for coming on and sharing information about your persistent world with the community.
Thanks for having us. Thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure, and it's an honor to really be able to talk about the Known Lands here on the podcast. I mean, we've been listening to the podcast for quite a while.
That's awesome. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
I've been doing D&D, I guess, seriously since high school. In college, I was lucky enough. I got into a great campaign where I was able to play the same campaign, the same character for about 4 years. And then I went on to grad school, and there I also, again, met some people and was able to play for a couple of years. And then one thing led to another, and I ended up moving to Japan. And then I couldn't find anybody to play with. And and I looked around, and it was like, well, and I found some people, and I thought, well, I don't really know the Japanese I'd like to make a saving throw, you know? So I just said, no, screw it. And then a friend of mine told me about playing online, so then I started playing online, and that's how I got introduced to Neverwinter Nights and Neverwinter Nights 2. And so really been playing just for almost like, I guess, off and on for 20 years now, playing and DMing. See, that's it in a nutshell, really.
That's awesome. I mean, I say this in a lot of our interviews, is the fact that one of the common threads that I notice, like people who either, you know, create persistent worlds modules and or, you know, head DMs and people that are involved in this level of Neverwinter Nights and or Neverwinter Nights 2, it's that they have a long track record of gaming. I mean, like you just said, 20 years in the Dungeons & Dragons, it lends a lot of experience in running persistent worlds and actually, you know, keeping people's interest and knowing what they like.
Yeah, it's been a fun ride. And it's been fun to play D&D in lots of different ways, because there's so many different ways you can do it. I mean, the rules, of course, have changed, too.
Oh, yeah.
Just different platforms. You got pen and paper and play by email and now, of course, online like this. And it's just neat the different ways you can kind of, I guess, cook it up, you know, and play it.
Oh,
and
yeah.
All of them have been fun. I mean, they all have their pros and cons, but they've all been a blast.
So what got you started in to actually creating Neverwinter Nights 2 Persistent World?
Well, I have to blame Lasher, who was one of our team members, actually the co-founder of the Known Lands. We had, like I told you, I played in college, and my last year of college, I had decided that I wanted to, you know, everyone has a time when they want to kind of make their own campaign. And I'd had some influences, the campaign that I had been in, plus I'd like the Forgotten Realms and even before I came to Japan, there's a big anime, manga influence. And there were just a lot of little things that I wanted to incorporate into a world. So I created a world. And then when I went to grad school, I met Lasher, and he had just finished DMing a campaign, and he was ready to take a break. And he said, I want someone else to take over. So, you know, I've got this campaign. I haven't really tested it out, but I'll run it. That's cool that. And we played, and everyone had fun, and I had fun. It was for me, I'd never really DM before, so it was kind of a trial by fire, but it was great. It worked out, and we all had a good time. And then, of course, they kicked me out. You know, not kicked me out, but I had to graduate. They kind of made me graduate. So, but we didn't want to stop, and so we kept going, and we went and we switched to play by email, which is, of course, a whole different ball game. But it was fun. We did that for about, I guess, 3 years.
Holy crap.
And then that petered out. And then another guy that I'd known from college, I'd role played with, Brock Fanning, another one of our team members, told me about Neverwinter Nights. He actually sent me the game. Sent me the game because it wasn't in Japan at the time. And he said, there's this world, there's this persistent world, Avalos, which is still running, Neverwinter Nights 1. I played there about 2 months, and then I decided I wanted to try and be the DM online. So I applied, and probably the dumbest thing I ever did was they accepted me. And and I did that for, man, I guess that was, I guess, 2, 3, maybe 4 years that I DM'd there. And, of course, while I was DMing, you know, you got to be a DM, I mean, pen and paper, you build stuff. You know, I mean, you do everything. You make the items. You make the NPCs. And if you just run the DM client, you can't really do a lot of that stuff that you really could do as a pen and paper DM. So I started to try to get into building and playing with the tool set and scripting a little bit. Mm-hmm. And horribly failed most of the time. But, you know, worked stuff out.
Sure.
And then we were kind of, you know, I guess I'd kind of gotten burned out a bit from DMing and stuff. And I decided to take a break. So I kind of left Avalos. And Lasher came to me and said, I got this idea that Neverwinter Nights 2 is coming out. Why don't we make a PW? And he says, I got this crazy idea that let's try to make it as close to pen and paper as possible. Let's have like parties that will meet every week, just like you do for pen and paper. And I said, you're nuts, man. That's not going to work. That's crazy talk. You're never going to get people to meet every week. People are going to shank. They're going to drop out. You're going to get a level disparity eventually. And I was like, no, it's not going to work. You're nuts. And then, of course, he blackmailed me. Well, he didn't blackmail me, but he pulled out the trump card. Was like, I want to use your game world that we played as the world, the basis. And I said, oh, well, in that case, you're a genius. Let's do it, yeah. Okay. And so that was how we started. In the beginning, this was 2006, I think. So it was before the game had actually come out. And, of course, we had already learned a lot of stuff about Neverwinter Nights 2, the stuff that they had been posting and on the forums. And so we had learned that the tool set was going to be different, but the scripting language was going to be about the same. So we started, before the game even came out, we started coding the core systems that we wanted to have, bleeding and death and that kind of stuff. And so we made a test mod in Neverwinter Nights 1. We got some playtesters, and they helped us out a lot to beta test it. Then Neverwinter Nights 2 finally came out. And then we switched over 2007. In fact, I think we're getting close to the day that we went live. So we're really about 4 years now we've been running.
Oh, congratulations. Yeah. That's a hell of an accomplishment there.
Yeah, I'm pleasantly surprised because I really didn't know how it was going to work out because we had really cut our teeth on Avalos, which is a great world, but we kind of wanted to do something a little different. Like, for example, last year's idea with the party system, which at the time, I know there are lots of PWs that do it now, but at the time I had never heard of a persistent world that ran things like that. I mean, you had heard of, you had large worlds that had guilds where players would kind of, who were alike, who had characters that were similar, maybe the same deity they worshipped, or they're all mages or a rogues guild, they would get together.
Sure.
And maybe if you had enough DMs, they would kind of sponsor you and run stuff for you every now and again. But I had never heard of a world that actually had parties that just like PNP that would meet weekly. And so I thought for us, it was a unique idea. And I know people do it a lot now, but at the time I thought, yeah, it's kind of crazy, but yeah, it might just work. And it's worked out really better than I imagined. And I really, it's kind of like the cornerstone of our world, I think. And really, it's our core. Really, I guess the way we would describe TKL in a sentence would be PNP in an online setting. We try to get as close to PNP as we can.
Yeah, I will say this. I mean, I'm not surprised that you were as successful as you were. I mean, I looked over your material, your website, and what you've accomplished. It is tremendous. I mean, being one of the bigger persistent worlds ourselves, you know, to see your accomplishments makes me, you know, like, hey, that's awesome. You know, we're all contributing a lot, and your server does contribute a great deal to the community. I mean, just from looking at how well you've put things together, reading over the layout of your server, and not just that, just the way, I mean, just the website. I mean, it's just fantastic.
Oh man, and I have to tell you, all of that is really in spite of me being head DM. It's really, that's got nothing to do with me because we have so many people. Our team is just amazing, and really, we couldn't have done it without everyone that's been on the team. We just got, in fact, I have to give a shout out to a couple people. Brock Fanning, of course, the guy I just mentioned, he introduced me to Neverwinter Nights, played with him in college. He is just really just a genius. He put out, I mean, if you've checked on the vault, he did the TKL card player. He did TKL Performer, where you can basically record and play back music in Neverwinter Nights 2. It's just nuts. And he's like a Neverwinter Nights Michelangelo. He just comes up with all kinds of, I mean, he can code. He does you know, everything. He basically did the website that you saw, and yeah, that's been a huge, huge thing for us. It really helps to attract people. It just looks so much better than what we had before, and it's just organized better. It's just awesome.
Well, a lot of times, and this is what I say a lot of times, it's about the branding. I mean, the simple fact that, you know, you have that. That's like a lot of times, you know, the first thing people see, especially how well you put your site together, the first thing they see when they come to look for worlds, I mean, they'll do a search, you know, Neverwinter Nights Persistent World or, you know, stuff like that, and they see that the first time. They're like, hey, you know, this is pretty cool. I mean, they spent this much time, and this is so well laid out. I got to go check that place out. Yeah,
you're absolutely right. I mean, it's the first thing. It's the first impression that people get.
Oh, yeah. So I did. I certainly did looking at it. So, you know, just like you were saying about how you have based your Persistent World on a pen and paper campaign world that you put together before. Can you tell us a little bit about it? Like, you know, the background, the story, and just to give people the background.
To put it very simply, like I mentioned before, the biggest influences I had were, at the time, were Forgotten Realms and an anime, a manga, I guess you could say, called Record of Lodoss War, and also the campaign that I played in. I guess the biggest thing is a lot of the gods really aren't that different from, like, Forgotten Realms. The big thing that I was interested in at the time when I made it was kind of good and evil and in between, and kind of mixing that up, really not having characters that were completely good or completely evil. And in the game too, we really don't stress alignment all that much for players and for NPCs. To give you an example, the main kind of thing you have is the world separated into islands, and we kind of did that originally. It wasn't like that, but we did that because we wanted to have transitions kind of make sense in Neverwinter Nights 2. But you have different countries. You have the humans are kind of set up in different nations. Otherwise, the other races kind of basically are each have one kind of nation. And what has happened is, I guess about now, it's 40 years back, the humans really weren't in nations at all. They were all kind of just fighting each other in little city-states. And there were some adventurers. There's always, you know, a group of adventurers. These five guys, who now are called simply the five heroes, who we're just going around doing the whole adventuring thing, and then they come upon this plot that where they find out that a race which had heretofore been unknown, in fact, no one knew that the Underdark even existed. Anything below where the dwarves lived was no one knew about it. You couldn't really go beneath where the dwarves lived. But then they found out that this place called the Underdark did exist, and that there was a race called the Drow who was coming, who was going to attack the surface. Why they didn't know. So of course they try to warn different people, and all they knew was that the dwarves were going to be attacked, and the dwarves lived in seven different citadels, six at the time. And they knew the dwarves were going to be attacked. The dwarves, of course, they go and tell the dwarves, and the dwarves are like, "You're freaking nuts, man! What are you talking about? What are you talking about? Black elves? You're crazy talk. You're talking crazy talk, you know?" So they weren't believed by any of the citadels. They were just laughed out. But they knew the threat was there, and being, you know, wanting to help people, they used all the kind of favors they had gotten in their years of adventuring together to build these armies to help fight the dwarves off, or the drow off against the dwarves. So they get their armies and stuff, and there are five guys in the group. That's why they're called the Five Heroes. And they each send an army to a citadel. But there's one citadel left, a place called Nachalan, which is kind of by itself on a small island where it's the only thing there. Most of the other citadels share an island with a nation, either elves or humans or halflings or whatever. So these five guys have to go to Nachalan by themselves and try to fight the drow. So the drow come, and of course the dwarves are completely unprepared, and they get jacked up. Though they, of course, are helped by the armies that have been summoned by the five heroes. Then you get to Nachalan, where it's just the five of them plus these completely surprised dwarves against an army of drow. So they're fighting, and they're not doing too well. They're losing, and it looks like they're going to die. And they find an artifact which kind of just appears, and they recognize it. It's a sword, which is called the Shadow Blade, and it's cursed. They know it's cursed. Anyone who wields it, their soul gets absorbed by the sword. They get possessed. They become horribly, I guess the simplest word is evil. But the sword is also extremely powerful. So you've got these five guys they have to make a choice. Two of the guys are warriors. One is kind of like a paladin type, good. The other is not evil, but he's just he's just your average guy. His name is Cardus. They call him Cardus the Fearless because he loves to fight. Well, the paladin has to think about it. I can take up this sword and sacrifice myself to save the world, or at least save Nakshaman. Cardus doesn't think at all. He just grabs it and does what he has to do. So he grabs the sword, and with its help, they win. So, they save the day. Everything's great. But then, of course, the sword, he kind of gets lucky. He has enough willpower to kind of resist the sword completely taking him over. But it still drives him insane. What happens after the drow attack, and this is, we call it in history, it's simply called the first drow attack because there are others that come. The humans, of course, kind of react. Well, the whole world reacts, kind of freaks out. And the humans decide, okay, this whole fighting against each other thing isn't going to work anymore. We need to kind of band together because the drow could come. Who knows when they're going to come again and who knows what they're going to do because some of the citadels get destroyed. The dwarves just abandon them. They shut them down. They lock them up and they leave because they've just been decimated by the drow. They just completely just took them by surprise. So you've got the heroes who end up, actually most of the heroes end up kind of helping to form the human nations. And some of them actually go on to rule those nations in the beginning. And then you've got Cardus who worships one of the deities called Dasagon, who's, we don't have good and evil deities. We don't have a god of like, I'm the god of evil or hate or disease or, beating the crap out of you. We have, Dasagon is kind of god of endeavor, unity. So, and you can take that in a lot of different ways. So most of the people who worship him, striving to be the best and banding together. Cardus, being kind of a nut job now that he's got the sword, the Shadow Blade, he kind of puts his own spin on it, and he gets a lot of the Duskan worshippers from the different islands and says, we need to make our own nation somewhere where we can all worship Dasagon the way we want to, the way we should, and all be together striving to be one. So he gets all these people together, and of course he's a hero. They follow him because he's helped save the world. And he goes to this island, which the halflings used to live on and still live on. They're living there peacefully. And he's like, we've come to join you. And they're like, oh, okay, great. And then you get kind of a whole Americans come into the New World meeting the Indians type of scenario where the halflings kind of get subjugated by these guys. And it's kind of in the whole. So you get a place where the halflings are kind of get beat on for a few decades and people get branded. They're, everyone, there's crazy rules and they're mostly everyone's property of the dictator. So they get branded on the arm or the forehead or something to prove. And you can't leave without his permission, which means you can't leave. But then the question is, is he good or evil? Is he a bad guy? Is he a hero? Is he a villain? He's certainly an antagonist to the PCs, which is the characters in the world. But is he bad? I mean, if he hadn't have picked up the sword, things would be completely different. So he saved the world, and yet he's also kind of not really adding to the greater good. But I guess that's kind of one of the things that we wanted to explore when we started the Northern Lands, was having kind of three-dimensional NPCs, and which, of course, I think helps to foster three-dimensional characters. So not everything's good. Not everything's evil. You just got these characters that you have to react to.
Nice.
I know that's kind of a long answer.
Well, no, that's fantastic. I mean, I think a great hallmark to any persistent world and or module is the fact that you have a very in-depth and cohesive background, something that people can latch on to or get involved in. I mean, without that, more like, okay, I got to do this or I got to go do that, and you don't really know why you're doing this or that. You're just running around.
Right.
And, having that level of background story is just, it's quintessential, and you really do have a great one. I mean, I've enjoyed just listening to you tell about it, and that's a really compelling background story to a campaign.
Well, thank you. I mean, a lot of it, like I said before, a lot of it's based on things that, I've absorbed playing and reading or watching these different sources. So I can't really, I think I begged, borrowed, and stole, One of the great things I think about the lore, though, is, well, one of the bad things is we have a lot of it, and I know that's daunting when people start, but I think one of the good things is we built on it. We continue to build on it, and really a lot of the lore, that's the five heroes, they were NPCs that were always NPCs from the beginning, but then you have other NPCs in the background that really, they were players in the campaign. They were characters that people played, like Lasher played and Brock played, and other people who are actually now team members played back in when we ran the campaign in pen and paper, and also when we did it in play by email. So, and even now you have characters that are adding to the lore, the people in Neverwinter 2 who are actually in the lore now because of the deeds that they have performed. That's one of the things I love about it. And just doing it is, it's not just a, I don't know. It's tough as a creator, I guess, to give up a lot of control. You know, sometimes you tend to be a control freak, and it's hard to kind of give it up and be like, this is my world, but it's not. You can't have it just be your world. It has to be everybody's world, the people that play on it and the people that are your team members. And that has been fun for me. I'm kind of like the lore warden, where I kind of check things and make sure things are consistent with the, and I won't say the vision, but with how things have been in the past, just keeping it all consistent and kind of making sense, sure. At least in my warped idea of senses. But it's great to have. I mean, a lot of team members have contributed really crucial parts of the lore, and I won't go into details, but really stuff that I never would have thought of. And even and also player characters through their actions have added a lot of great stuff to the lore. That I just completely impressed by it and amazed and grateful.
I noticed that you request players fill out an application to join. Can you tell us a little bit about how this process works and why you chose to do that?
Sure. Well, the process is pretty simple. We have an application form on the website, and we ask people to put in a few things. The most important thing is their character's background and where they're from, if they believe in any deities, why they choose to be an adventurer, and why they end up coming to Silverbridge, which is kind of the center of the module in terms of the actual areas in the mod. What we do is, of course, the application comes to us, and we have all of our team members, and we have, I think I just checked, we have like 24 team members now, and we all live in different time zones, so we all take a look at the app and we discuss, and then we have one person, which is me at the moment, who will get back to the player and the prospective player and ask maybe questions, maybe if they got something a little bit wrong in the lore, we say, hey, look, this is kind of different, do you mind if we change your background to be like this, or clarify things, or maybe ask people to expand on things. It's a process that usually takes about 2 or 3 days, simply because we want to have everyone on the team have a chance to look things over and give feedback, and then just getting back to people. So that's the process, and we try to do it as quickly as possible, because I know people get nervous about, you know, I sent the application, I haven't heard back from you, you know, what's going on, are you guys there? And so we try to get back to people as quickly as we can. But it's also important for us that everybody on the team has a chance to look at the application over.
Yeah, that would kind of defeat the purpose too. If you just say, okay, here you go.
Yeah, okay, you're in. Why we have the app is simply just, well, the big thing is getting to know someone before they join and making sure, because it's hard to gauge whether someone's going to like TKL or not without talking to them a little bit before. So really the big thing for me is when we mail them back and clarify stuff, just to see if this is really the kind of world that they want to be on, where, you know, the PNP stuff, or the PNP type world, some of our systems, which are kind of different than a lot of other worlds, like the semi-permadeath and stuff, which some people aren't into, which is, you know, that's fine by me, you know, different strokes, different folks, everyone's got their fun way of playing D&D. Well, I'll put it this way. One of the things I love about TKL is we've never had to ban anybody, ever. We've never had any huge player issues with griefing or anything where you might have to kind of tell a player, okay, you know, you got to get out. This is also, for me, I think, goes back to being as close to pen and paper as possible. If you think about it, you wouldn't just like pick up a guy off the street and go, hey, you want to join our campaign, you know, or just like if you're just walking down the street, somebody comes up to you, hey, I want to play D&D with you. Can I come over to your house? You know, and you're like, what? No, you just wouldn't do that. So for us, you just want to get to know the person a little bit and make sure that that they're going to, I guess, you know, fit in and would have a good time. And so I think the app's helped out a lot. I know that the application is daunting for a lot of people. Even some of our team members said that they looked at us and kind of passed the first time because they're like, oh my God, I have to write a book to join this PW. This is nuts. And we've tried to streamline the application as best as we can. And we've also, like I mentioned before, the lore has gotten pretty massive, and I know it's tough for people. They'll look and go, oh my God, there's like 500 pages of lore, I'm never going to get through all, you know, I'm never going to be able to come up with a concept. So we try to point out, in fact, one of our newest team members, Ice Lara, has done a great job of kind of making a guide to show these are the things you need to look at, and everything else, don't worry about it yet. Just look at these, you know, the deities, the nations, the races, and this will be enough. Just check this out, and then you can make kind of a simple app. And really, the first app, it doesn't have to be, you know, you don't have to publish a novel. Sometimes people actually do send us really detailed stuff, but really, we're just looking for a basic, you know, a basic player concept, a character concept that you can play with. And then you know, if that doesn't work out and you want to make something more involved, you can always do that as your second character or you know, another character. That's something I like to, I think is important to stress to people that are thinking about joining, is really the first app doesn't have to be, you know, it can be pretty vanilla. It's as long as you've got the basics down, you know, I've come here to adventure, I've come here to avenge my father, or, you know, something for us to work with. That's the other thing, really. The other thing that's important about the application for us is if we have a background, then it's something we can work with. One of the great things I like about the party system is you know the characters every week because you're playing with them every week. One thing when I was on other DMing on other PWs, you would log in and players would come and it was just completely every session was different. You had 10 different guys every time. Some of them you might know, some of them you might not know. Completely different levels, different classes, and you just had to come up with something right then and there. And part of that's really fun. I call it kind of flying by wire, you know, DMing on a wire. It means you can't plan and you can't involve characters' backgrounds. And now with the party system, you can do that. So the more background that you give us, the more we can work it in. You know, I love having like characters' mothers show up or their relatives or an enemy from the past or just something. And really that helps players get into it and expand on their character's background and their story. Because it's a, you know, one thing about D&D is it's a story. It's kind of like a movie where I'm the director, but I'm not really the writer. It's really the players are the ones writing the story and guiding it. And I'm just kind of the rudder, you know. That's another reason. So I guess those three reasons are why we have the application.
Yeah, it's definitely something that comes to mind when you're describing that, you going through how the process works, is the fact is it's not about, you know, getting a billion people on your server. It's about getting the ones who want to be there, the ones that will fit in and actually contribute to the progression of your story and your world, and just for the simple fact that you're weeding out the people that are more likely going to cause more of a headache to you down the road.
Right. So, and just people that probably wouldn't enjoy it anyway.
Yeah, I can appreciate that. I mean, just from our 2.5 years being up, I mean, we have had a ton of players, but, you know, how many of them actually stay around for the entire 2.5 years and do exactly what you're asking for? I'd say maybe 25 to 33%, you know, and if I would have implemented something similar to that, I think I would have had a similar result as you. Those same 25 to 33% would be the same people that are logging on every day, you know.
Yeah.
And they're contributing.
Definitely. And we've got, I mean, like you said, we're not a huge world and we never strove for that. And I'm really happy with the size that we're at now. We've got, I would assume we've got 10 parties playing now, and you've got average party sizes between 3 and 10 characters. But you also factor in that players can play up to 3 characters at a time. And I think we've got maybe 50 players, give or take. And we've got, like I said before, I think 24 team members now. So we've got, we're not a huge world by any means, but we've got a great, I mean, if you make that calculation, our DM ratio is like one DM for every 2 players. So we have a lot of interaction.
Yeah, that's great. Is that, you know, how many DMs do you have on staff, and, you know, you introduce them, and, you know, are you looking for more DMs?
Oh, we're always looking for more DMs. And we've got, like I said, we got 24 team members. Of them, I think 20 are DMs, including myself. We've got me. We've got Tiger Moon, who's our current world leader, is also DM. CLS. We've got Hawk Winter. We've got Simeus, Truffle Hunter. We've just got Quantier, the Q. Oh, man, we've got just a load of people. And I wish I could name them all. Yeah, and we've got the great thing is, we've got a good team of people. We've got a good mix because, like, well, when we left Avalos, we had guys come over and join us from Avalos. So we had guys that we knew in that sense. And, of course, a lot of guys are guys that I know personally. Leifus, Brock, like I mentioned before, Lasher, guys that I played with in college and in grad school and stuff. And then people we knew through Avalos. And then also we've got people that just came after we, you know, came and joined the Known Lands and then ended up becoming team members. And so we've got a great core, and we get along. The one thing I love is that we get along well. I mean, we have our discussions, and but at the end of the day, we're all friends, and we're all, you know, team members together, and we're all working for the same goal. So we don't really have anything, you know, like heated discussions or arguments per se. We just really, it's just, I can't praise the team enough. I mean, they put up with me, so I mean,
that's just,
That they should get a medal for that already.
Well, yeah, you definitely be, you know, you're definitely blessed to have a staff like it, because it really is, it's difficult to find a lot of individuals, especially as many as you have, that are, that there's that level of dedication to your world to, you know, continuously be a part of it, because there's nothing harder than trying to run, you know, something of that nature without having the support that you need to do it.
Oh, you're telling me. I mean, definitely. I mean, I have to give a shout out to our team members. our world leaders, because we have Lasher started off, and then he ended off to Brock, and now we have Tiger Moon. And really, world leader is a job I'd never want to have, because you just have to coordinate all kinds of different stuff. And I just love being the head DM is fine by me, but just people. And not just that, but of course, coding the systems and building. I mean, really, I have to give a shout out to Fifth Dragon, 5D. He's just really the best in the business, and really he's built the bulk of the world. And just our coders, we have E-Number, V7 used to be with us, did the bleeding code, and just all kinds of people. Leophis, another one of our coders. Simeus did a bang-up job on our custom DM one we just got. And Brock, I mean, all those guys have contributed to just, I mean, if they hadn't have been there and weren't here now, we wouldn't be up. We wouldn't be running at all. So, yeah, we've got a fantastic team. I can't praise them enough, really. I'm on the shoulders of giants. I really am. I'm just standing on the shoulders. I'm just playing around.
Like they always say, the old adage, there's no I in team. You know, everybody works with everybody else, and that's what makes a world successful. Any project does just a persistent world. So.
And like you asked, looking for DMs, we're always looking for DMs. we want to have more parties. Really, that's the only thing holding us back is just time. Just our own free time. You know, everyone's doing this in their free time. So, I mean, I run 3 parties now. Everyone else runs a party. And then DMs, they don't have a party, but they still, we have what we call free-for-alls, FFAs, they'll just schedule a time, say, hey, anyone can come and play, and I'm going to run something for you. We have a calendar on the website where we post all the events. And through the mix of the party events and the FFAs, we just have, you know, a lot of chances for people to play with a DM and interact with a DM. Of course, you don't have to have a DM. You can log on any time. The world's up 24/7. But I think having a DM on and just interacting with players is, personally for me, is much more fun. So we're always looking to have more DMs to join and help us do that, help us interact with the players.
Yeah, as far as, you know, something that we've been discussing in previous podcasts with the other server leaders, persistent world leaders, and content creators, what would you like to see from the community in the upcoming days? Is there like a something you'd like to see the community move towards for the Neverwinter Nights 2 platform, or you know, what do you think?
One thing is, I guess the only thing that we really lack in terms of expanding on what we've got now is models, dynamic models, static, even static models. There are a lot of great coders out there, a lot of great scripters, a lot of great builders, and we use a lot of the content that the community has put out. I mean, the list is just huge. I mean, of course, the DMFI, the PC tools, item modifiers. We just added a while back, we added that someone had put up some auction code, which is really a really cool system that lets players buy and sell each other, not in real time, so they can, people in different time zones can, players in different time zones can buy and sell items with each other, all kinds of stuff. But what you don't see a lot of is models, really. And I just think it's because it's hard to model. I mean, it takes a lot of time. I mean, we've been up 4 years, and I think the first year we were doing our core systems, death, bleeding, and some quest stuff. And the second and third year, we were doing just expanding those, working, getting the bugs out, and figuring out other stuff that players wanted and kind of adding it. We added the custom DMR that I just mentioned that Symbius had made. And now really the fourth year is, I call it the bells and whistles phase, where we really have all our core stuff out and done. So now it's just kind of getting fancy and stuff that we don't really need, but we just put in. I just say, hey, let's just put this in. See what happens. So we've added some custom races. We added Minotaur as a player race.
Yep.
But that's hard to do because it's hard to get. There aren't really a lot of dynamic models. The only ones that I know about are the ones that Cam made for Atlas 2, like the Lizard Man and stuff,
mm-hmm.
which we have incorporated.
We were in talks with Johnny Ree, the one from the Beholder,
yeah.
and a couple other things. And, you know, I still talk to him. He's one of my contacts. And at some point, you know, when he can get some time, he's working on a couple side projects. But, you know, I've been trying to nudge him to create a couple new models, one of them being a Dracolich.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
I've been pushing him for that one.
the Minotaur, we use his Minotaur's head because, what we had to do to make it, I call it a semi-dynamic model, because the head model, you can't really add hats or anything. I know the horns can, you can add some jewelry to the horns, I think, but, you can't add hats or whatever. But we had to stick the Minotaur head on a half-orc body, and that's how we did it. So the legs aren't really, you know, we would have loved to have had hooves, but we don't. So we just, you know, they're just kind of, I guess they're sticking the hooves in boots. I mean, that's how we had to do it to get it done. So,
mm-hmm.
I, he did the Drider, and I would, oh man, I would love to have a dynamic Drider, you know.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's the reason why I corralled him, you know, to do that. I mean, but you know, like I said, he's on another project right now, but he's definitely, you know, looking at doing something down the road if his current works are successful, because that's what he does for a living. He's a game creator, and you know, a lot of the people who do that, they do have other endeavors that they have to keep up with. I mean, pay the bills and everything. So, what do you think about the Neverwinter Nights 2 platform, and how would you go about getting more players into it?
Well, I remember back when, even before Neverwinter Nights 2 came out, and everybody, well, not everybody, but there were just a ton of naysayers on the forums. They were like, oh, God, it's going to be horrible. It's going to be horrible for multiplayer. You can only have 5 areas in your mod. It's going to be a huge module. You can't fit enough out. You can't fit any outdoor areas in there. There's no DM client. The DM client's non-existent, pretty much. And just a lot of stuff was said, and a lot of that never came to pass or was able to be worked around. A lot of people are negative about Neverwinter Nights 2 as a game, but I think the tool set really, and I know the scripting language got a lot better, I thought, compared to Neverwinter Nights 1, and it lets you do a lot more stuff. It's a lot more customizable and a lot more dynamic. So I think, I don't think it's that bad of a platform. I don't have a lot of complaints. Of course, I'm not a professional programmer, so I don't approach it, and nor am I a computer game designer, so I don't approach it from that viewpoint. But in terms of what we've been able to do and what it's allowed us to do at TKL, I can't complain. I mean, really, if the platform weren't around, we'd still be in Neverwinter Nights 1. And I think Neverwinter Nights 2 is an improvement. I mean, there are good things and bad things about 2 versus 1, but I still think it's an improvement over the original. What we would like to see, I think, well, one thing I've noticed is recently it came out on Steam, so people are buying it up from Steam, and we've gotten a lot of players from that. We've gotten a lot of prospective players, a lot of applications. I mean, of course, the game's not going to be updated anymore. We're not going to see any more patches or anything. So really, there's nothing in terms of the platform that I think can be done, except for the community doing stuff. And there's not much you can do. I mean, the hard-coded stuff is hard-coded. So really, it's just about us getting players in just through our own, what we've done, the website and our own mods to Neverwinter Nights 2, what we've done for the Known Lands. And I guess just getting, I guess, our brand, like you said before, our brand, getting our name out there. So, like doing this podcast, redoing our website. We're up on Facebook now. And, we expanded. We try to keep our wiki updated and everything. Just getting the word out that, hey, we're still here. We're still running. And we're going strong. And if you're interested, give us a shot. Come by. I think that's really all you can do at this stage of the game.
Right.
I mean, the game's not going to get any more advanced, and you're not really going to see a lot of people buying it. Really, the only people that are going to be playing it are the guys that love your world or love Neverwinter Nights 2 in general.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, you can't. The people who end up playing Neverwinter Nights 2, I mean, they're people who, you look, like you said before about the Steam sale. You know, we've seen the same surge on our world as well. And I always come back to this. It's like, If you want the brand, the actual game platform to stay alive and to continue to grow, the only way it's going to happen is if you sell the game.
Yeah.
They pulled it from all the stores here in the States. You can't buy it anywhere unless it's a used game store or something like GameStop or something. But you can't actually go to your local Walmart or Target or whatever other franchise that department store and pick it up. Best Buy even doesn't even carry it. Yeah, so that it does help to actually sell the game platform. So, you could do that, and like you said before, from our perspective, it is your brand and how well you present yourself to the people who are out there sniffing around like a basset hound, sniffing around.
Yeah.
You see a looking for a server. That's pretty much what goes on. You got to have the game out there that nobody's going to get on it.
Yeah, one thing I've noticed is that. I think a lot of the players that we get now, I see two types of people. One is people that have been playing Neverwinter Nights 2 from the get-go. The server that they've been on is either folded or they're looking for something different. And I'd say that's probably half the people. And then the other half are people who are just trying out Neverwinter Nights 2 for the first time. And really, the only reason they bought the game is to play multiplayer. And those people are a lot like me, where they're in a situation where they can't find a group to play with wherever they're living. So they're going online and looking for something as close as they can get. And in a lot of cases, that's what we are. I mean, that's what we provide is that pen and paper type of game. So I think not just within the community, but you have to, like you were saying before, but getting people to buy the game, you have to go outside of the current community. So like Facebook, going to the D&D page and, mm-hmm. and putting stuff up and talking to your friends and getting your friends and your other and their friends to, hey, check us out, you know, Neverwinter 2, it's in the bargain bin, you know, it's probably $10. Give it a shot, man. It's, you know, it's cheaper than a tank of gas.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think what I try to do, you know, from my perspective is when I talk to people, you know, people I work with or, you know, people that I game with, because, I mean, we game other than Neverwinter Nights, and we play Magic the Gathering in professional settings, and you know, we meet a lot of people that are into that genre of you know, product, and trying to, you know, explain to people, it's like, hey, I was like, how much did you spend on World of Warcraft? You know, and they tell you, and you're like, okay, do you realize for $10 you can pretty much get unlimited material? I said in most cases, obviously you can't speak for every server or module out there, but in a lot of cases they're professionally done. You're getting well thought out material, just like your server, and it getting that availability for nothing, $10.
You're absolutely right.
It's just that's how you go about, you know, marketing the game after the game has been technically, you know, it's not being marketed except for third party individuals like Steam and other, you know, venues that use that course of delivery, you know, not a physical medium like it was when it first released. I was going to say too, you know, over, like, you've been up for, you know, since 2006. That's a long time. You know, over that time, there's enjoyable moments. You know, there's the good times and there's the bad times. What is some of the most enjoyable moments you can think of looking back at, you know, your tenure at the Known Lands and, you know, dealing with players and running these campaigns?
I'll tell you right now, my favorite thing is handing out rewards. It's my complete favorite thing of everything that we do. I love it when we have a plot and the plot gets to the end. You've got the climax and the characters save the day, win the day, whatever. And then you can hand out the rewards. And that's one thing that I really love. And I love doing it, and I also love the way that we're able to do it, because we've tried to come up with lots of different ways to reward characters, and not just your standard items. We're a small server, so we're able to do stuff like Bic edits, so we can kind of, you know, we can change stats, we can add skill points, we can give a change your appearance, we can put wings on you if you want to, and just lots of different stuff. Changing names, adding titles, you know, making a guy a nobleman or a knight, giving a prestige class. You have to get approval for the prestige classes on TKL. So, and they're all kind of, they all have lore behind them. So things, and one of the things I love, Simeus, the guy who did our DM one, also came up with custom companions. If you look back on D&D, like I came from second edition. I started with second edition. So all my,
same here.
All my knowledge is really still second edition. I have a cursory knowledge of, like, you know, 3E and 4th edition, whatever. I'm old school, you know. So one of the things I loved about second edition is when you got to a certain level, this was a rule that I never really saw used a lot, was if you're a fighter and you get to, like, 10th level, you could build, like, a stronghold and you got followers. You had people show up, you know, like an army showed up. And that you really couldn't do that a lot in pen and paper. We used it in play by email. I'd have characters would get there from, like, we had a ranger, and he got, like, a bear just showed up. You know? He's like, what is this? It's your bear. He's like, oh, okay. And we can do that in TKL, and I love it. So we have, you know, we use the henchman system, and we have people can get custom companions, and they can actually control the inventory. It's like getting a second character that you can role play at the same time. It's awesome. And they can dress them up, you know, and they've got their own inventory. They've got their own, it's persistent, it's saved. When you save your character, your companion gets saved too. It's awesome. I just love it. And we have custom familiars. You can get custom animal companions and everything. We've added lots of different ways to reward people. And I love giving those out because it's like Christmas, you know. It's just like,
yeah,
you're like Santa Claus. Like, hey, okay, you guys did a great job. And here's your, you know, you can get a +3 sword. Well, actually, that's kind of rare for us. But or, you know, you got, you know, wiser at the end of this thing. You learned all this stuff, and you bump up the guy's end score by 2, and they're like, oh, yeah, woo. It's just awesome. I love doing that. And plus stuff like with their background, too. Bring in stuff like, okay, you meet your long-lost father, or you finally got revenge on the guy that destroyed your family, wiped out your tribe, or whatever. just that is for me is the most fun.
That's nice. Yeah, I do get a lot of enjoyment doing that too. Like when it's Christmas time, you know, to get done with a custom quest or something like that in it RP type of setting, people really respond well to that too. You know, yeah. Getting that level recognition. It's not like, okay, I click this button and I get this. Because I, you know, finished this quest or something. It's not an anime. It's actually you're getting something outside the box that you normally can't get, like you were talking about with all the other stuff, or your game systems and things.
Yeah. Another thing that we do is we can have NPCs recognize your character. You just put it in their perception code. So there are some NPCs, you know, you walk into the town and say your character helped to defend the city from an attack. Mm-hmm. And they'll recognize you and be like, hey, thanks for saving the city. You know, they have a little thing they'll spit out. And I think that's just cool. Like other players see that, or other characters see that. You know, you walk by this merchant, he's like, hey, how you doing? And that's your character's like, you know, it just makes your character actually more of the world, more part of the world.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
I like that we're able to do little stuff like that because we're not a huge server.
No, that's that. Yeah, exactly. I mean, that just that level quality. You know, a lot of times, you know, it's like this. One of my friend's dads told me this. He says, when you wash the car, he said, you know, you got to do the white walls. You got to do the trim. You know, it's like you could have a clean car, but you could have dirty tires and dirty trim, dirty windows. But that, see, when you do stuff like that, you're buffing the chrome. You know, you're making it look. People see that stuff. Not everybody, but there's a lot of there's a large majority of players that appreciate that level of detail that adds to the environment. So yeah, never underestimate that kind of work that you put into a server or any project of this nature, that because it really does get noticed, no question. Oh, yeah. I was to say, you know, hey, you know, thanks for coming on the podcast and going over your world. I mean, you did a fantastic job on your world. You have a fantastic team. You know, before we close out, is there anything that you'd like to, you know, say to the community and or anything you'd like to talk about?
Well, first, I'd like to thank you again for having me on. And I know we had to reschedule, and that was I appreciate you being able to do that. I guess really just I want to thank our team for just being the best. And I want to thank our players for sticking with us through everything, giving us a shot and applying in the first place, and just playing along with us. It's been a fun ride for me, and I hope it's been a fun ride for them. And I guess just to anyone who's interested, if you're looking for a place that's kind of like PNP, just give us a shot, come by and check us out. I think you won't be disappointed. That's it.
Yeah, I have to agree with you there. Definitely give the Known Lands a shot. I mean, it's extremely well done. You won't be sorry. Just from what I've seen so far, from the level quality of work and workmanship, and the level, just how long you've been live, it's just a great testament to your contributions to the community. So, you know, keep up the good work, and you know, we'll be here anytime. Hey, you want to give us some updates about your server? We'd be glad to come on one of our new segments and give us some updates.
Great, thanks.
And well, thanks again for coming on. And until next time,
get in game and level up.
Oh, that's freaking awesome.
You can always reach us via our website at neverwinternightspodcast.com or by email at show@neverwinternightspodcast.com. The opinions and viewpoints expressed on the Neverwinter Nights podcast are not necessarily those of its sponsors or those of Obsidian, BioWare, Atari, their partners, or employees.
The Neverwinter Nights podcast is a production of the Realms of Trinity. We're solely responsible for its contents.
For now, I say we crack some of those kegs and drown the flagon in wine.
The Neverwinter Nights podcast is copyright 2011.